Welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast. I'm here today with Louise Tattersall, owner of Bodylight, an aesthetic beauty and laser clinic in Milton Keynes. And today we're going to be asking Louise, what's your problem? So Louise, welcome to the pod. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
So really, why don't you just give us a bit of an idea about what you do at the moment? How would you describe what you do at the moment?
Well, I essentially run a beauty clinic based in the heart of Milton Keynes, just down by Sainsbury's, and I've been doing so for 21 years.
You look like a spring chicken. Oh, so
I wish. Thank you.
So 21 years seems like a long time when you think about maybe some of the changes that you've seen in that time. But let's maybe take it back to when you first looked at the business itself and thought, this is what I want to do. So talk to us a little bit about what happened 21 years ago that made you do that.
So I actually worked for a doctor that owned the business, and I was just a laser practitioner. I say just, but that's what I did day in, day out, providing laser hair removal services to the people of Milton Keynes and surrounding areas. It was very unique at the time. There was only one other place in Milton Keynes that offered laser. So it was fab to be a part of that. And it was a small team, and it was situated down by the train station. And the doctor that ran it was from Australia, and he wanted to start a new business venture in Australia. Mm-hmm. And he essentially, because I had built myself up and become the manager of the little premises and the clinic, he gave me first refusal of the business. He said, would you like to buy it? I'm moving back to Australia. Would you like to buy it? And I mean, I was absolutely gobsmacked. Never, ever did I think I'd have that sort of opportunity, and never did I think that it would actually become a reality. But it was something that I did want to consider, and I went to my parents and I talked to my friends, and I loved the idea of taking it on. I was essentially running it the day to day, but I just had no clue about the finances at all. So it was a big decision, and it was a lot of money back then.
Mm-hmm. How old were you at that time?
I was 24. Mm-hmm. I'd worked in the clinic for 4 years. So I started in the year 2000. And I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. Yeah, I think at the age of 24, that's quite a brave step to be thinking about buying a business.
Yeah, I think when I look back now, I do think it was a huge, huge step. And the business was up for sale for £100,000. And that was more than my house was at the time. And I didn't have £100,000.
I mean, who has £100,000 knocking around in their back pocket? No,
exactly. So it was a huge amount of money. But I thought, this is a potential for me, an opportunity for me that I may never, ever get again. So I actually approached my uncle, who mm-hmm. was an accountant, and I asked him to look over the books. And he said he thinks it's a viable business, but it's currently not making any money. So, you know, if you're going to do this, there's going to have to be some changes. We're going to have to make some cuts.
Wow. So new business owner.
Yeah.
Taking over and immediately making cuts.
Taking over a business that was running at a loss, essentially. Mm-hmm. Not a huge loss, but a loss nevertheless. But I think I could see the potential, and I felt that I could see some changes that I could make to what the current business owner was doing. Mm-hmm. After speaking to my uncle, I said, is there an opportunity to do this with someone? You know, the thought of doing it alone was absolutely terrifying at 24 years old. I wanted that support of someone else, but there wasn't enough for another wage in the business. So he said, if you do it with anyone, they're going to need to be essentially a silent partner. So he said, why don't you do it with your dad? And I thought, oh my God, I love my dad dearly, but I don't think I could work with him. So after a little bit of a discussion and, you know, some thought and some persuasion, I actually asked him if he would consider doing it with me. He already was a successful businessman. He ran a chain of opticians up and down the country, and he had a manufacturing business. So he had good business acumen. And I just thought, well, he's going to guide me well. He's my family. He's going to look after me. And he always has, to be fair. And thank God he said yes, because I wouldn't be where I am now without him. I wouldn't be where I am now without my parents. My parents actually remortgaged the house for me so that I could raise the 100,000 to take on the business, which I am still paying off today. So it was a very long-term loan. But it's, yeah, I mean, without that, I would never have had the opportunity.
So thinking about getting that money, so if I take you back a little bit to where you said, you and Uncle Paul, thank God for Uncle Paul.
Yeah.
So where you and Uncle Paul said, okay, we think this is a goer. This is how much money we think we're going to need. Did you do that just to purchase, was that amount just to purchase the business, or was that running costs for the first year?
No, it was really just to purchase the business. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than that, we knew what was coming in each month because obviously we had the books to look at. And so just making those changes quite quickly, cutting out the luxuries, tightening our belt on everything, made the difference. So I think we started making money not too long after, you know, in the first sort of year.
And were you living at home with your mum and dad at the time? Or had you already moved out and purchased a house?
I'd moved out and purchased a house, a little two-bedroom house. So I was 24 at the time. I purchased my first house at 20. So, yeah, I mean, it was a huge, big deal. But all I cared about, to be honest, was that I could just maintain taking a regular wage from the business. It was never about making huge sums of money. It was just about getting a regular wage to support me. And hopefully with a bit of commitment, time and energy putting into the business, I would be able to grow it, which is obviously what we've done over the years, which I'm so proud of. You know, we started, or the guy that owned the clinic, that was the Australian guy that left, he started in a two-room clinic. It was a little office suite in the station. You know, it was literally two rooms and the smallest of reception areas. And we moved premises in 2009 to a double-story frontage with 10 treatment rooms and a nice spacious reception area downstairs and upstairs. So it felt like a huge achievement to have been able to do that.
And when you moved to that new premises, was that more money from the bank or bank of mum and dad? Or
we did get a loan at that point for to take on the business and to get a mortgage for the business. And obviously we already had the existing loan from my parents' mortgage. Yeah, so we had to borrow more. It was a big investment.
And how did that make you feel in terms of borrowing the money? Because I get the sense that you're quite astute. You know, you bought your first house at the age of 20, which is very unusual. Even back then, it was quite unusual.
Really? Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of people would rent until kind of mid-20s and late-20s and then try and purchase something. I mean, now it's considerably harder for people to get anything, whether it's an apartment or a house.
Yeah, but absolutely.
You've said to yourself, okay, I'm going to get a house at the age of 20. And to do that, I'm going to need an income and a wage.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm going to do. Do you think that that has been something that you've been taught by your parents?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. The goal was always to, you know, very traditional upbringing, just to meet someone, have a family, have a good job, have a nice house. You know, I didn't ever want for huge things. I didn't have huge aspirations, just a nice life, nice, comfortable life with a supportive network, which I definitely have. And I'm so grateful for. But yeah, I've lost myself again.
I think it's hard to know when you're looking to borrow money, for example, when you're borrowing money from family and when you're borrowing money from the bank. That's quite a a shaky foundation, or it can feel quite concerning to have that loan.
It is, and especially when you're talking large numbers. But I think because of the support from Paul and from my parents, I've always felt that the risk is much lower because I've got their back in. And also, they're not going to lend to you if you can't pay it back, right? Mm-hmm. They have to see your books and they mm-hmm. can see what you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
So it just was part and parcel of it. I mean, I was a little bit nervous, but it's not like it stopped me.
I think that's part and parcel of doing any business is the money as a side of yeah. things, and it's knowing where you can get money from.
Yeah.
And I think people worry about going to the bank and getting money from the bank. But in terms of making money, so let's talk about profit. So again, you bought a business that wasn't making money. You said you took out some luxuries to try and balance the books a little bit better. What kind of luxuries were they?
Silly things, really. We had a water machine.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice coffee machine. what else did we do? We tightened up on staffing, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had maybe staff crossing over where we didn't need to, you know, we were mm-hmm. on skeleton staff, like mm-hmm. cutting down. I was doing more hours, taking on what I could. So it didn't matter if I did more hours. I went needing more money. I just needed to get my salary each month mm-hmm. just so I could cover my bills, and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long did it take you to break even?
Probably about a year
mm-hmm.
from memory. It's a long time ago now.
But that's good for it to only take 12 months, because yeah. a lot of those changes can make your team feel unsteady as well. Mm. If you're reducing staff, if you're trying to take out some of what we might call the cherry on top.
Yeah.
So like the nice coffee machine or the water machine or whatever.
Yeah.
So that can sometimes make your team feel a bit unsteady. Do you still feel that you did the right things then, or would you do anything differently with the beauty of hindsight?
I think we did do the right things. Yeah. I mean, I didn't like it at the time, but because I wanted the nice coffee and all the other things, there was more to it than that. I can't remember. I'm trying to think what else we cut. Even staff, incentives and bonuses, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. It was mm-hmm. just all on a halt.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing there to reward people with. Until we were making money, we didn't feel like we could start mm-hmm. rewarding. So that all got cut. What else?
And knowing what you know now, if you bought a business today, would you do the same kind of things?
Well, if it wasn't making any money,
mm-hmm.
probably would. I mean, I don't have huge experience, but the experience I had is that it worked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As in, that was the guidance from Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's always been the money man for my business. I do the day-to-day. He does the finances. That was his recommendation. We went with it and it's mm-hmm. worked. I mean, maybe it wouldn't work for every business,
mm-hmm.
but
it did for you.
Thankfully. Okay.
And then thinking back to 2009, so you said you moved to a bigger building. Is that the building you're in now?
It is, mm-hmm. yes.
So what made you make the leap to move there?
Well, we were just desperate to have premises that could be seen.
Mm-hmm.
We were so hidden. I remember we used to pay £52,000 a year on advertising. One advert a week.
Wow.
In the Citizen newspaper. And it was just to be seen.
Goodness me.
Yeah, £1,000 a week. And it, I mean, now I don't even have a Citizen newspaper. we would never pay for marketing, like in any form of paper.
Mm-hmm.
But back then that was our only way.
Because mm-hmm. you didn't have a shop front.
Didn't have a shop front. Mm-hmm. Weren't allowed any signage.
Mm-hmm.
We created an A board. You know mm-hmm. what an A board is? And we bought the biggest one we could buy and we had it put on wheels and we had to wheel it in and out every night. But we had so many problems with the council about where it could be. So that was a nightmare. We tried all sorts, but because of the location of where it was at the station, it was so restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the walk by there was huge because mm-hmm. of people traveling.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't reach them. We'd mm-hmm. go and stand out and give out flyers, but we got told off for doing that. We went and put flyers on cars all around CMK, then got told to go and take them off. So the hours we spent putting them on, we got back to the clinic and then had to go and literally walk around and take them off of mm-hmm. every single windscreen.
Mm-hmm. In the days before social media advertising. Oh,
there was no social media back then.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And now how does that advertising work for you? So do you do a lot through referral?
I mean, probably one of our biggest sources of marketing is referral, which is always the biggest compliment, right? But of course, through social media. Mm-hmm. We do mail shots to our existing database. So we're constantly sending out newsletters and information via that way. I mean, it's so, so powerful, isn't it? To be able to put something, or if you have a cancellation now, mm-hmm. I mean, we actually had one today, yesterday at 10 to 7. We close at 7. Somebody cancelled for 2 hours for today. And, you know, that's someone standing around doing nothing that you're paying. So mm-hmm. you're desperate to fill that space. And if you're lucky, if you put something quickly out on social media or send a quick mail shot to your database, it's filled like that. It's mm-hmm. like amazing. 20 years ago, there was nothing like that. You didn't have that chance. You didn't have the opportunity to reach somebody that quickly.
So would you say there was a lot more wasted resource?
For sure, yeah. But then there was a lot less competition. Mm-hmm. We were really unique. Nobody mm-hmm. else was doing it. I think the only other place at the time was Boots. And okay. then they went bust, mm-hmm. their laser clinic, mm-hmm. because we had a few of their nurses come over to work for us. Mm-hmm. But there was nothing. Mm-hmm. Whereas now we're a bit saturated, aren't we? Mm-hmm. But competition's good.
Mm-hmm. So in the so is that been a recent thing, kind of 5, 6, 10 years?
Yeah, probably the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think's changed to make more people be interested in doing that as a business?
Well, the demand is obviously there. I think mm-hmm. more awareness from clients, knowing just talking about laser hair removal specifically, knowing the huge advantages to doing that young mm-hmm. and having a lifetime of being hair free. Mm-hmm. I mean, I forget what luxury I've had. Mm-hmm. You know, I started working in that business at 20, had my laser hair removal done as part of my training with some of the other girls. And I, you know, I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about it if I go swimming on holiday. And I mean, I'm half Cypriot. Mm-hmm. I was a hairy Greek. I was a hairy girl. So I used to get shaving rashes, you mm-hmm. know, really prickly legs, mm-hmm. Ingrowing hairs. So, and I think, you know, getting that out there and for more people experiencing it and that word spreading, there's a lot more demand for it. So then with demand, there's obviously more people opening. And there's the affordability back then. Mm-hmm. The laser that the doctor bought that we used was 100,000. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was purchasing that laser as part of the business mm-hmm. several years later, but mm-hmm. the laser itself was 100,000. Again, that's a mortgage for someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even now, you can spend between 50 and 100, 110 for a really good laser, mm-hmm. but you can also spend 2,000.
Wow.
So, you know, there are people that will take the cheaper options mm-hmm. and provide a cheaper service. But there's usually a reason for those cheaper options mm-hmm. being the price they are, and the results don't usually deliver.
And that's quite risky. And I think maybe people don't always realise the risk that they're taking when they go for a discounted option.
Oh, for sure. And you're talking about a laser. Mm-hmm. You know, this is potentially a piece of equipment in the wrong hands that could burn you, mm-hmm. blind you. Mm-hmm. It's a serious bit of kit.
Yeah.
I mean, again, going back all those years, we used to actually be registered with the Care Quality Commission. Mm-hmm. And we were treated like a private hospital. Okay. We would have an inspection that was announced every year and an unannounced inspection. And they would come and spend a day with us, like 7, 8 hours, and just scan every bit of paperwork, policy, mm-hmm. procedure. They wanted to see our client files, the notes that were written, the photographs that were taken, the record keeping, everything. It was so strict, and I mean, it was terrifying. I used to hate it. I always imagine it's a bit like an Ofsted mm-hmm. visit for a school. It was awful, but it set you apart mm-hmm. because you were one of the good guys. You were one of the people that were doing and ticking all those boxes and doing everything correctly. Mm-hmm. Whereas even back then, you had people doing it that had done hairdressing and would go and buy this £5,000 laser, £2,000 laser, and then would just set up in their garage at home,
mm-hmm.
you know, with no real knowledge or understanding mm-hmm. of the wavelength, the laser and how damaging that can be, if it's fired wrong, if it hits the wrong thing, if you use the wrong skin type. You know, if you use the wrong levels, you are putting people at risk.
Mm-hmm.
But done safely, the results are amazing.
And do you still get audited in the same way now?
No, they deregulated laser clinics.
Okay.
In about 2017, I think it was. So there is nothing in place now,
mm-hmm.
which is quite sad. But I like to think we continue as we once did. You know, mm-hmm. we do all the risk assessments and all the policies and all the procedures as we always did.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reviewed annually, mm-hmm. and the staff training is exactly the same. But we have the advantage of having that experience.
Mm-hmm. Whereas other people that are setting up on their own
may not
have never been through that kind of, level of understanding, have they?
Yeah. And having that governing body overlooking and overseeing and mm-hmm. checking everything,
mm-hmm.
scrutinizing.
Mm-hmm. So fast forward a little bit from 2017, and I'm going to take you through the COVID years a little bit. So in your particular business, obviously, is quite high risk, I would imagine, during the COVID era.
For sure.
So what happened, let's say March 2020, what happened to the business at that time?
So obviously we were shut along with everybody else. Which, you know, it was the weirdest thing, wasn't it? And I remember being so upset, thinking, oh my God, is my business ever going to mm-hmm. open again?
Mm-hmm.
And seeing what other people were doing, and then thought, I need an online presence. And, you know, I'm not super comfortable doing this. I've never done interviews. I've never really spoke on camera. I've never really done videos for my business. But suddenly I felt this overwhelming need to stay in touch with the people and the public so that they know we're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be here. We're mm-hmm. just following procedures, but we're going to be here. So please stick with us, sort of thing. But it was a strange time. And obviously as the business owner, I was still having to deal with emails and people that would make an online booking randomly because they thought, oh, it's open, even though it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And just various sources of communication, all the social media communication would come via me. So I still kept quite busy. We then reopened. I can't remember when it was. Was it the May, July? Can't remember.
It was a little bit longer, wasn't it?
Was it later for us?
Yeah, and possibly.
We had all those restrictions in place. We had to wear face masks. We had to mm-hmm. wear face shields. We couldn't treat the face.
I was going to say, were there treatments that were off limits?
So we announced that we would reopen and people then flooded in with appointments, which was amazing. And then we had to then ring up half of them and cancel because I would say 75% of what we do is on the face,
mm-hmm.
lashes, brows, facials, laser, mm-hmm. laser hair removal on the face is one of the biggest things that we do. Botox, filler, I mean, everything. It was like, this is crazy. We can't, so you're telling us to open, but now we can't do.
Can't do the majority of what we were going to do.
Basically, we can do people's toes. So that was really hard. I think we closed 3 times in all
mm-hmm.
and reopened.
And when you were open, were you having to rethink then what your prices were, what your product treatments were?
Prices we didn't change at that point, but what treatments could we offer and mm-hmm. how could we adapt them, but we just had to cut what we weren't allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no way that you could get around it.
And the team, were they on furlough at that point?
They were on furlough. Mm-hmm. Obviously when we reopened, they came off furlough and then they went back on furlough, then they mm-hmm. came off furlough. I think that was 3 times.
Mm-hmm. And how did you keep them together and motivated when they were, you know, not in the business, wasn't open?
Regular Zoom things. Mm-hmm. I think that's when I first discovered Zoom. So we would all chat on there and we would have little meetings. I took them around a little care package to every one of their houses just to see them and mm-hmm. check in with them. I mean, we were all very blessed that summer, weren't we? We mm-hmm. we had beautiful weather and I think they just were trying to make the most of the situation, really.
Mm-hmm. And did you manage to retain
all of them,
your people?
Yeah, all of them.
which I think says something. You're being very modest here about how you're looking after your people, because quite a few people were displaced during furlough periods because they realise, oh, grass is greener, or I want to do something else, yeah, or whatever. So to actually maintain those people and have them come back three times all together is, yeah, fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Staff retention is something I'm also really proud of. Mm-hmm. I work with somebody called Claire, who is the clinic manager. She's now been with me for 19 years. So obviously I've only run it for 21. So, mm-hmm, she's been with me almost all of the time. Mm-hmm. And most of the staff have stayed 10 plus years with me. Staff retention is important.
What do you think has made them stay? Because I think, again, that's quite unusual, not just in this kind of day and age, if you like, because people do move around a little bit more frequently than perhaps they have done in the past, but also your industry, typically people will stay for, I'd say, what, 5 years is an average?
Maybe. I mean, I have got no comparison. And of course, we've lost people along the way, but had somebody leave last year after 17 years. And the reason she left, and probably the person before her, is it's often, we're an all-female team, and it's often down to having children and, mm-hmm, work-life balance. We are in an industry where evenings are required, weekends, mm-hmm, are required. And I have always tried to accommodate the needs of the staff and be as flexible as possible. But equally, we've got to meet the needs of the business. Mm-hmm. So, and it's very hard when you have a great relationship with, you know, your staff, and you really want to try and please them and make the hours and everything work for them. But you can't do that for one and not for all. Yeah. So it's a very tricky situation. But I do think that flexibility and really trying to, over the years, be, I mean, some people would say, you know, I'm foolish, or why am I adjusting the business even to meet the staff needs? You know, that it should be the other way around. But I'd rather retain good staff, mm-hmm, 100%. We used to work 9 till 7, Monday to Saturday. One of the requests over recent years was to finish earlier on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So that's now in place. They finish at 4. Mm-hmm. I think when everyone starts, they start every Saturday. Mm-hmm. But someone like Claire, who's been with me a long time now, does 1 in 4. Some, mm-hmm, do 1 in 3. Some, mm-hmm, do 1 in 2. So almost like the longer they're with me, the more, mm-hmm, flexibility with the hours, yeah, there is.
Absolutely. And I think that shows that people will get rewarded if they stay with you and they show you the loyalty, but that you're listening to what people want.
Yeah, we certainly try as much as you can. But it's, like I say, it's hard because you also got to meet the needs of the clients and the business. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was that the staff had their way, we'd be doing 9 till 3 so they could all do the school pickup. But it works. It works as, mm-hmm, we are at the moment.
So thinking about that family balance and how you understand that, let's take it back a few years. So you'd had the business 5 years before you had the twins, or was it a little bit?
Yeah, about that 4.5-ish, yeah.
Yeah, 4.5. And then you're pregnant, you know you're going to have twins.
And we decided to take on the new premises. So I had the twins in the October, and we got the keys to the new premises on the 1st of January or 2nd of January. So, that was a tough time. Mm-hmm. That's probably been the biggest struggle. Mm-hmm. Really, the guilt when I'm not with the children, certainly when they were younger, mm-hmm, and feeling that I should be. Mm-hmm. But then the guilt when I wasn't at work and, mm-hmm, feeling like I should be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's the case for most women, but having children and running a business has been the biggest challenge. And it's probably only in the last 12 months, I feel like I've got the balance better than ever. There obviously has been periods where it's been okay, but it's very up and down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if staff leave, that always tips that balance because you're back on the floor and you're back in treatment a lot more. And you then having to, on top of being back, doing the clients and and carrying out the treatments, you're then having to recruit. Mm-hmm. And then that all takes time. But then on top of that, you then need to train. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to train someone, deliver the treatments, and fit it all in.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. And when you're open, well, we start quarter to nine to quarter past seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my kids were little, I would miss bedtime mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would literally get up and go, and they would be dropped at my mum's or to preschool, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could never have done it without my parents. They used to have my kids for me. I couldn't afford to put them in childcare, mm-hmm. having two at once.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely been the hardest bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the guilt that's come with that. I mean, I remember my kids saying, like, probably only 5 years ago, you're always at work, you're always at work, you're never at home. It used to break my heart. But then I wasn't in a position to just leave it then. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that the balance has come eventually.
But it's taken a long time to get to that point. It's taken a long time.
Yeah. I mean, there's huge advantages to running your own business, obviously. People say, oh, you know, you can have as much holiday as you like. And you can, but you actually take probably far less than everybody else because you haven't got a set amount and you don't, you know, you need to be there and mm-hmm. you want to be there.
And I think you're possibly harder on yourself.
Possibly.
Than you would be if you were working for someone else, because like you say, you don't have a set amount of holidays. Whereas if you work for someone else, you're kind of like, well, I've got 20 days holiday. I'm going to take all 20 days.
Absolutely.
And I think you do, there's always something to be done, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I mean, now I'm not in the clinic 9 till 7 every day. But I'm, you know, last night I was working till 9 o'clock at night. But I finished at, I don't know, 3:30 in the day at the clinic. Mm-hmm. But then I logged on and I'm doing bits and responding to emails. So there's always bits, but the balance is definitely better.
And what do you think has changed to get to that?
Probably my attitude a little bit, mm-hmm. And experience, and just in trusting my staff more. Mm-hmm. It's hard to let go. Mm-hmm. But when you have got people that have worked for you for such a long time, they know you inside out and they know how you like things done. And that's a huge thing, you mm-hmm. know. I can almost trust that if I'm not there, the senior staff that would perhaps have to deal with the situation would deal with it in a way that I would, because they've seen me deal with it and they know mm-hmm. how I like things done.
Yeah.
But that takes time as well.
It does take time. And I think there's an element, it's the trust that it's you trust. Have to give other people. And even though you think, I don't know whether they're going to do it in the right way, or I think they're going to make a mistake. And sometimes you might give them all the tools that they need and they still make a mistake. Or I think you're tougher on yourself than you are other people, because if you make a mistake, you would berate yourself for making that mistake, wouldn't you? And so we give people the tools to do the work. But as business owners, we have to give trust to other people
100%.
Because that balance doesn't happen otherwise, does it?
No. So I probably would have done that sooner in hindsight, but I just obviously wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard to trust other people, but you have to kind of just accept they are going to make mistakes and I am going to have to be okay with that, because what's the worst that's going to happen? I mean, with the clinic, that's quite a, that's quite a dicey thing with laser, for example. Could be burning the whole building down. Hopefully not, but you know, so there's an element, I think, of risk there that obviously you have to just be conscious of, isn't it?
100%. But that's where I just got to make sure people are trained and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've done your due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Have I said that right?
Yeah, due diligence.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, I suppose that's been a big learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
Trusting,
mm-hmm.
delegating,
mm-hmm.
and not always think you can do it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and how does your partner fit into this? Is he part of the business or is he?
No, nothing to do with the business. Mm-hmm. Probably been in for one treatment in 20 years. But he is my biggest cheerleader and, you know, support and rock. And, you know, when the kids were young, he would just drop everything, because if someone was sick at the clinic, you know, mm-hmm. it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was it. You know, no one else is going to want to come in on their day off. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe occasionally people would, but certainly it felt that it was on my shoulders. So mm-hmm. I would have to be there if I wasn't due in, and he would have to sort out his work. That was it. You know, mm-hmm. you need to not work. Mm-hmm. Luckily, he is also self-employed. He's a one-man band. He's a landscaper. So he does, I suppose, have that flexibility, but he would still be letting people down.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had always been around for the kids and been there to help me in that respect. And now he's like my handyman plumber, you know, can you fix this? Can you sort this tap out? Can you everything? So yeah, again. So
your maternity leave was pretty much non-existent, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks of nothing before I was back in the clinic. Obviously, we were looking at having to set everything up with the premises and we were having meetings. But 3 months and I was back to working and mm-hmm. treating clients and doing regular shifts. Mm-hmm. But it just felt like nothing.
Mm-hmm. And do you resent that?
Yeah, I actually, when lockdown came, I remember thinking, I'm getting my maternity leave, like, I don't know, what was it, 12 years later?
Mm-hmm.
Because I just had time to enjoy the children a bit. Mm-hmm. And whilst every day during lockdown, I did some work, mm-hmm. every single day without fail, I had a good proportion of the day with the kids. And obviously they weren't at school. So mm-hmm. I felt like I really got some time back with them
mm-hmm.
and was so grateful for that. So I did resent that I didn't get that at the time.
Mm.
But it
balanced itself out.
Yeah. And what can you do? It was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have had the business that I had if I didn't invest the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
It is about the balance.
Yeah.
And it is about understanding that at different points in our life, other things will be in balance.
Yeah.
So I always think there's kind of like a triangle, if you like. So there's fitness and health, if you like. And then you've got your family and your friends, and then you've got work. And it's kind of like a little bit of a triangle.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time that triangle is a little bit wonky. Somewhere in that triangle, it's a little bit wonky.
Yeah.
Your fitness and your health might go out the window a little bit. Or actually you don't spend as much time with family and friends as you want to. Or actually your business can suffer because you're not paying attention and working on the business. You're too busy working. I love
that triangle.
In it.
It's so true. That's so true.
Mm.
And it's not always the same tip of mm-hmm. the triangle. It can change,
it's
right?
It's not always the same wonky leg, is it, of the triangle? So thinking about all three of those things, what if you've got those three points of the triangle, what drops first for you if you have to choose?
Back then probably health and fitness did.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed now. Obviously, and then family and business was, you know, and I do regret that a little bit. I think, you know, my focus should have always been on my family. And I think at times it wasn't. It was, mm-hmm. you know, business. I've just got to keep this going and I've got to make it work and I've got to make sure that we're paying the bills. And the responsibility to pay everyone's wages is huge. And there's a huge pressure every month. I mean, if I could change it now, maybe I'd do it differently. But
it's possibly how you move forward with that thought, though, and saying, okay, well, in that triangle, which one do I let dip?
Yeah.
And where do I focus? But I suppose
experience has made the triangle. You said which one goes first.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose that's changed now. So health mm-hmm. and fitness for me is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my happy place and mm-hmm. feel like I get my me time. That I didn't get.
I read something the other day, and I think this is definitely true for me, and it might be true for you, but about the fact that when you go to work out, and where we work out is a personal training gym, so we get trained, we have very much focus and attention on us, but we don't have to think in that space.
Oh, 100%.
We are not responsible. Well, we are to a certain extent, but we're not responsible for thinking about what happens next.
Yeah.
We can be our authentic self. We don't have to be anybody else because it's not our business, because it's not our family. Yes, friends are there, but we can just be our authentic self.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure. So actually we show perhaps a slightly more casual, relaxed person 100%. Than other people know us to be.
100%. Yeah. Because you're not thinking about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just in that moment.
Yep.
And it, I do think it's the best thing for your, for people, for their mental well-being, you know, for mm-hmm. having that headspace for, because we all live such busy lives. I mean, I remember feeling when lockdown hit that I had just been on this hamster, wheel, and I just couldn't get up. You know, you just go all the time. And that's not just work. That's work and then kids and clubs and shopping and cleaning and cooking and trying to visit the old people, you know, in your life and all the trying to squeeze in friends and, mm-hmm. And you say yes, yes, yes to people all the time. You know, do you want to meet up? Do you want to do this? And you don't want to miss out. And I'm still much like that, by the way. I hate missing out. But lockdown was like this huge, wow, got chance to like breathe and reflect and enjoy and be present in the moment and be grateful for everything that we have. And mm-hmm. it was such an eye-opener, and I thought, I don't ever want it to go back. And I do think it's gone back a bit because life has become busier. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to think it's not gone back to the same degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly trying to prioritise family
mm-hmm.
above everything.
Do you ever have a lockdown weekend where you're kind of like, I don't want to socialise this weekend. I want to spend time with my family or whatever it is. Maybe it's spend time with friends. I don't know. But, you know, have a lockdown weekend where you block everything out.
Yeah, we do like 24 hours a day. But the same sort of thing, just mm-hmm. so that we've got quality time together. Yeah.
Because I think that was what was nice about
lockdown.
Lockdowns where you didn't have, you weren't on the hamster wheel. You weren't having to rush from one place to another and having lots of things to do. The difference for a business owner like yourself during that time is that we ended up having to think, how are we going to survive?
Yeah.
How is my business going to survive during this time? I don't know about you, but we were still getting rent requirements from the landlord. We still had, they paused council rates, didn't they? But we had bin collections and all sorts of stuff going on. So I don't know whether you were still getting those kind of requirements coming through.
I believe so. I mean, Paul, thankfully, that's what he
mm-hmm.
took hold of and dealt with. Mm-hmm. I mean, he obviously was saying, you know, if there's any way of generating any income. So we were trying to sell products online.
Yeah.
But selling products has never been a big part of our business. We're more service led rather mm-hmm. than retail. I know that he took out all the support that we could get with the grants and everything at the time. So we got through.
Mm. And I think that's what it was getting through, wasn't
it? Yeah, it just was getting through.
Mm. But taking the joy where you can.
100%. Yeah. Whilst you were really concerned what was going to happen for the future, it was really making the most of that bad situation and mm-hmm. embracing the time with the family and
mm-hmm.
the good weather and the barbecues. Yeah.
And the paddling pool.
Yeah. Didn't they go out of stock at one point? Yeah. Completely.
So do you think perhaps spending time with your children during that time is part of what's helped inspire your daughter to start her own business? Because she's only 16, right? And she started her own business.
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, she's obsessed with animals, and she's just she volunteered for 2 years in a dog groomers and then had the opportunity to stay on and be as a paid dog groomer or assistant, and she's learned the trade. But she her hand was forced, to be fair. She was told she either needed to go self-employed or she'd have to look elsewhere. But she was so keen to do it, and mm-hmm. she's obviously her own boss now, and she has to get her own dogs in, and she's got her own little Facebook page, and it's only been since February, but mm-hmm. like you say, she's only 16. Mm-hmm. She's currently doing her GCSEs. We don't want it to be her prime focus right now. It just needs to be something that ticks along in the side, mm-hmm. On the sidelines. But yeah, maybe I like to think both her dad and I work for ourselves. So mm-hmm. maybe deep down, we've not had that conversation. She never really said she has no desire to work in my business.
Well, you say that, but she's doing dog grooming.
This is true, but she's an animal lover, not a people lover. So, yeah, maybe. It is similar in some respects, mm-hmm. isn't it? Yeah.
I think we get inspired by our parents and by people around us. Because you were saying earlier that your dad was self-employed and had his own business. Do you think that inspired you to want to do your own thing as well?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think the main reason for wanting to be self-employed is to probably have some freedom,
mm-hmm.
freedom of choice and freedom of time. And but I don't think you necessarily get that straight away, especially if you're trying to grow it and you need to invest everything into it with regards to your time. And but of course, there are some huge advantages as mm-hmm. well.
So if you were thinking about giving advice to someone coming into this kind of business, so into a beauty or aesthetic business, what do you think your advice would be to them?
Just to really think about everything, you know, think about how they're going to set themselves apart, because there is a lot of competition out there now. What's going to be their niche? Have they got lots of contacts? It's good to have the contacts. It's not easy to constantly generate clients, you know, new clients coming in. How are they going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
What support have they got around them? You know, are they doing this alone? Are they going to have someone by their side? You know, I couldn't have done it without Paul. I obviously make all the decisions day to day, but financially I needed him, you know, to guide me. I probably would have spent far too much, more than we had, and then drove the business into the ground. I don't know. But I just think about everything long and hard, but it could be the best thing they ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And depends. There's obviously so much scope. Are they going to do it from home? You know, people say to me when I get stressed, why don't you just jack it all in, go and do it in your house? Mm-hmm. You know, you haven't got any stress with staff, because that's one of the biggest struggles with a business and challenges. Just do it from your house. But, you know, that isn't what I ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that. But someone else would perhaps be really delighted just to achieve a small home business.
Mm-hmm.
And that might tick all their boxes.
And if you think about where you are right now, what would you say your biggest challenges? So you just talked about potentially staffing challenges there. So when someone's sick or they're not around or whatever's going on with them, obviously you need to reschedule, you need to get cover, and you need to shuffle things around. But would you say that's your biggest challenge at this point in time? Or is there something else that's kind of on your plate right now that you're thinking about? How can I solve this?
Nothing currently on my plate, I'm pleased to say. Staff sickness has always been probably one of the bigger challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And the last few years, it's not been so bad. It just takes one bad egg, though. Someone mm-hmm. that's constantly a sick note, you know, that
mm-hmm.
Every Monday morning isn't in. And again, the problem for me is if I knew that they weren't in, that's fine. I can plan my life. But it's that last minute, an hour before the shift, hi, I won't be in today. And then you've got a column 10 hours back to back of clients. And mm-hmm. who's going to do that? And I'm not being known as that business that's going to let people down, you know, and that's the down, you know, when people come to us as a beauty salon or a beauty clinic, they love the fact that if they've booked in for their nails and one of my staff is sick, they're not going to get let down the day before their holiday because someone else will be mm-hmm. in place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's their home person and they're sick, they're screwed. We often get calls last minute saying, oh my God, you know, I'm going on holiday tomorrow. My nail lady's poorly or whatever. Or my nail lady was pregnant, but she's gone into labor early and all mm-hmm. those things. There's no backup. Mm-hmm. So that's the huge advantage from a client perspective, going to a salon or a clinic rather than a home person or mobile person. So when staff are sick, I will do everything to avoid a client being cancelled.
Yeah.
I can't stand it if they're cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we have a policy that we will give them the treatment half price
mm-hmm.
if we have to reschedule them. So it's not in our interest. We don't want to do that. And they don't want that, really. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means they might have to come in 15 minutes later or whatever, but it's just a little bit of juggling. But it is all, I feel, always on my shoulders. And that mm-hmm. has always been, over the years, the biggest struggle, because I might be walking out the door to do the school run and then I get that call and it's like, stressed mm-hmm. straight away. That mm-hmm. feeling of, oh my God, you know, my whole day has changed now.
Yeah. I was planning on spending 3 hours sorting out the database, and now actually what I need to do is do 4 hours of clients.
Yeah.
And not be able to go to the kids' school play or
and then you're letting them down. It's not just, you know, it's always the way, it's not just the school run, it will be something like that, you know, star of the week at school, and you think, oh, I get to go this time. And then that happens. It's just sod's law, but it's, that has been the biggest thing. And that's where all the guilt comes in, because I missed out on so many of those things. And it weren't through not wanting to be there often. It was due to something like staff sickness or last minute changes. So that was always tough. But it's got less. It's definitely got less. And I know when I interview now, I really drum it into people. I'm like, so how sick are you as a person?
On a scale of 1 to 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10. And just really try and instill like early doors about how impactful them being sick is, not just on the client, you know, one client, it's a whole day. It is impactful on all of their colleagues, because we're trying to squeeze things into everyone else's columns, and obviously me and the business. It's just huge. It makes, it's not like they are stacking shelves in Tesco's and someone else can just stack that. I can't just get someone in from an agency last minute. It's not the case. So yeah, that's probably juggling home and work life, probably number one challenge. Number two is staff and the sickness element.
Okay. So thank you very much, Louise. You have been a fantastic guest. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the upside.